Oh hey, I'm glad you're here. Growing up in a video store was nothing short of magical. But the thing is, I didn't know anything else, so I didn't realize until much later how lucky I was. Not just because I had unlimited access to movies and unlimited popcorn, but because of what was located right next door to my dad's video store. You see, this was the 80s, and one shop over was a little place called Putton Video. It was miniature golf and an arcade. So every so often, my dad would give me a dollar and send me next door. So I'd stuff that dollar in my pocket and I'd walk down the sidewalk, push open the doors, and instantly the air would be full of a cacophony of arcade games. I'd stroll past Galaga and Tapper, stop to watch a frustrated teen attempt Dragon Slayer. I mean, I had to. Dirk the Daring's in the game, so, you know, the name alone. Sometimes I'd see kids gather around someone attempting a high score on Journey or Q-Bert. I never really talked to anyone. I would just drift through the scene like a ghost. Something I can do now to this day, being that I'm not a huge sports person, so whenever people talk sports, I can just kind of glide around and no one notices I'm there. I'm just haunting their conversation. Woo! What did I play with my four quarters? Nothing. You see, I wasn't very good at arcade games, ever. I found them pretty stressful, to be honest, and I was way better at something else, eating candy. Laffy Taffy, especially. So I would reach the counter in the back, and I would spend my dollar on something, and, take my time to really enjoy the candies. And while I did, I would read the jokes to myself. What happened when David had his ID stolen? We had to call him Dave. It's pretty good. Chuckle to myself, watch kids play pinball. I love to see all the bonus features, you know? Still do. My wife, she loves the bonus features. She'll play a game till she wins the bonus feature. So I'd stand there, you know, waiting to see if a kid would get the multi-ball on Black Knight while I ate a green apple Laffy Taffy and read to myself, why was the tomato blushing? It saw the salad dressing. Pretty good. Remember that for recess. And then once I finished my candy, I would leave the arcade, return back to the video store to watch another movie. But I'd be back in a couple days to haunt the arcade once more. Which brings us to today's episode. Before we get into that, just a little caveat. This conversation, we had some audio issues with the recording. So I had the option of not, you know, airing it or putting it out in its entirety, which I think is the better thing to do because I had a great conversation with the guest. It's very, very interesting. Lots of wonderful specifics, a great wraparound. So I hope that you do stick with it and do enjoy this conversation. The film is Arcade Attack, Silver Heroes versus Video Invaders. The guest is a pinball expert, and this is VHS. Hello, and welcome to VHS. I'm your host, Dirk Marshall, and I'm joined in the studio by Jessica DiNardo, who is a pinball player, creator of Bells and Chimes PDX, tournament director, co-host of the Pinball Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Did I get it all right?
You got it all right.
Okay, perfect. Your website is Bells Pinball PDX. Bells Pinball PDX. I keep trying to stop at spin, because there's a spin in the middle of it. It's not helpful. Bells PinballPDX.com. You are Twazoo on Instagram, The Great Twazoo on Twitter, Bells and Chimes PDX on Facebook. Where can people find the Pinball Podcast?
People can find the Pinball Podcast on Facebook. They can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, all of the apps awesome. For podcasts. And since we last spoke, I started my own pinball company, Soft Plunge Pinball. So it's softplungepinball.com, Soft Plunge Pinball on Facebook, and on Instagram.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'll have to follow. That's great. What is what prompted that?
A desire to have different types of pinball clothes or different things available to market because I wanted them to exist. Mm. So I'm trying to bring back the 70s through pinball fashion, I guess. And also just make a series of dream theme pinball t-shirts. So my first one was a Golden Girls pinball shirt, and my newest one that just came out is a Wu-Tang pinball shirt.
I would like to see a crossover of the two. Like maybe the upper part is Golden Girls, the lower part's maybe Wu-Tang.
Right, and they blend together. Mm-hmm. Yep, I could see that. Or like the members of Wu-Tang hanging out eating cheesecake.
Yeah, or yeah. Just a reboot of Golden Girls with Wu-Tang members. They're in a retirement community.
I'm super into this.
Yes. Could be pretty fun. And what is Bells and Chimes?
Bells and Chimes is a women's league. So it's started in Oakland, California by Eka Schneider. And then I started one here in Portland, Oregon. And now there are chapters literally all over the world.
Wow.
We meet once a month for casual meetups to hang out and play pinball and learn flipper skills and table rules. And then I also run once monthly women's tournaments for the people who want something a little more competitive.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And so anyone interested, they could just go to...
They could show up at C-Bar here in Portland, Oregon every first Wednesday at 7 o'clock. We have the pinball room reserved for ourselves for 2.5 hours. So all women, cis, trans, non-binary, self-identified women are all welcome and come play some pinball with us and hang out.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Also, you compete?
I compete less than I used to.
Right.
I used to compete a lot. I used to be on the list of like top 20 most tournaments played when I first started playing of the year, but that has since fallen off quite a bit. I love running tournaments now, so that's where a lot of my energy's gone. I still compete in some larger events or some fun events, so I'm not kind of going after world ranking points now.
Okay.
But I am about to fly to Pittsburgh to compete in the world's largest pinball tournament, so over 1,000 players.
Wow.
It's my fourth year doing it, so I'm really excited. And then I'm actually flying after that to Brisbane, Australia to help run and participate in the largest pinball tournament in the Southern Hemisphere.
Whoa.
Brisbane Masters.
So have you been... You've been before to Australia.
I have. I have really good friends there. So I played in the Masters last year. I played in the Cooley Classic in Coolangatta. And I did well enough in those two tournaments to qualify for the Australian National Championship for last year. So I went and did that in Canberra in February.
That's amazing. And what is the pinball community like in a global sense? Like when you go to Pittsburgh or Australia... Now, do you see familiar faces? Is it a warm reception? Do you,
all my Aussie mates, like, I can't wait to see them and, you know, have a little extra time to hang out with them. They do house balls where you go play in people's homes, which is my favorite kind of thing because it's really casual and laid back and you get to play games you wouldn't normally get to play. And Pinburgh, when I go to Pittsburgh, I see people from literally all over the world. That you only get to see this one time a year, basically,
right.
But it's always good to see them and like try and get a couple games in together and do that really quick catch up when you're seeing someone in between like series competition, I guess. But it's also opened up like, you know, when I go travel somewhere, I can put notices out like on Facebook or Instagram and be like, hey, where do I go play here? And I'm linked up with people literally all over the world. So trying to help, I have a friend who now travels to Romania for work. So I like reached out to a friend of mine in Germany who I met in Pittsburgh saying, hey, I know you're doing the European Championship. Do you know anyone from Romania who could help my friend find pinball in Romania? So it's like this weird little network that we have. And it's really great because you know you share something in common with someone. So you may not know anything about the rest of their lives, but you share this hobby that we're all like oddly passionate about. So, you know, if you're playing pinball and I'm playing pinball, we at least know that we're going to have something that we can talk about as a starting off point. And it may be that we just play the game of pinball and then we never see each other again. Or we may be like, oh, you're a really cool person. We have a lot of stuff in common. Like, let's continue to talk. But either way, you can still walk in and play some games of pinball with someone.
I'd never really thought about this until you just said Romania, but are there different pinball making companies around the world, or would they be playing the same... like Dark Knight game that we would have here?
So America is definitely and historically has been the largest producer of pinball machines. So the Chicago area specifically, like Bally Williams were based out of there. So a lot of the classic games came out of at least the Chicago area. And Stern Pinball is still in existence and they're the largest manufacturer in the world right now. But you do have other companies that did exist and do exist. So Zacharias is like like cool Italian company that made some weird games that you'll still see pop up some places.
Yeah.
There was an Australian company called Henken that actually made like an Empire Strikes Back pinball machine that never really made it over here.
Oh.
So a lot of games get sent overseas from us. We get some like Spanish imports or Italian imports, but in terms of current manufacturers for pinball machines, most of them are coming out of the States. There have been a few that have come and gone from other places, but there aren't a lot of pinball manufacturers who are working currently. Mm-hmm. So you get Stern, you get Jersey Jack, which is in New Jersey. You get Spooky, which is in Benson, Wisconsin. And then there's a company called Dutch Pinball that had made a Big Lebowski pinball machine. But they kind of got stuck with some issues with their factory, so like they didn't really exist for a long time.
Got it.
Highway was based in the UK, and they went under after making an Alien pinball machine, which is actually an amazing machine, and I really wish that there were more of them because it's super fun to play. But it's hard to start a small pinball company. You need like a factory and manufacturing and assembly line and all those things. Mm-hmm. So you either go large scale like Stern or something like Spooky in Wisconsin. It's family owned and it's just like this one warehouse space and they do everything, you know, is just a small group of people who are coming together and put those games out. So you definitely see the spectrum of things, but there have been international companies that have made games. They're weird and fun to play. Normally you don't see a lot of them. So for me, it's like a treat to come across some games that are coming from other places. But yeah, it's definitely nice to go to Australia. Like I played a game there called Orbit One, which it's the first game that was made by Henken, that Australian manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, I've never seen another one of them in my life. And in Australia, maybe you'll find another one, but like you're not going to find it here.
Wow.
Yeah.
And before we move on, you're Twazoo on Instagram and the Great Twazoo on Twitter.
Yep. I don't really use Twitter anymore.
Okay, good. Good to know. People do not go to Twitter.
I mean, you could see like some old... I use it when I go to PAX.
Sure.
Because like all my video game friends are all on Twitter. But aside from that, it's kind of sat dormant for a while. So if you want like a history of Jessica, sure, then you could go check out like my Twitter from 8 years ago.
Right. I don't blame you. But these titles are not your pinball identity.
No, no.
So what is the history of Twazoo?
Did Jen put you up to this? So when I lived in Chicago, I was performing. I was the variety portion in burlesque shows. So I am the Great Twazoo, the world's only vagician.
A vagician.
So I do vagic.
Vagic.
Correct.
Got it?
Yep. And my magic name, as dubbed by my magic mentor, the amazing Tomas, I am the Great Twazoo.
And is the amazing Tomas performing still?
He is still performing, yes. Okay. He puts out DVDs, like instructional kinds of things, and he is still performing, and he is still amazing.
Awesome.
Yes.
I just watched the Amazing Jonathan documentary. Have you seen that?
Not yet. It's in my queue.
Yeah, it's only on YouTube.
Yeah.
But people can see it for free and it's pretty great.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was always fascinated by him, so it's it's a good documentary, just an honest portrayal of a person and some unhealthy relationships and addiction and some impressive pedigree of magicians talking about him. So it's pretty lovely to get to see that, you know.
Yeah, I've been rewatching all of Night Court because Harry Anderson is the one who started my love of magic as a kid.
Yeah.
So, you know, thank goodness for library rentals because I'm on season three.
So you're no longer a magician.
I mean, I'm always a magician.
Okay.
That's a lifelong.
Once you're a magician, always a magician.
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
But I could not find any more magician content. I don't know if there is. I couldn't find movies for sure. So we're not talking about magician movies today.
We're not talking about magician movies. I do have a couple Vimeo clips, but that's about it.
Great. People can find those on Vimeo.
I'm pretty sure I password protected everything.
Okay. Well, that's probably,
for the best.
Sure. The film we are brought together to talk about is called Arcade Attack, Silver Ball... So, okay. I'm going to start that again.
It's a mouthful.
It is difficult. Arcade Attack, Silver Ball Heroes versus Video Invaders.
Dun, dun, dun.
A title longer than the film, almost. Most people just call it Arcade Attack, which mm-hmm. I think is a bummer because you miss out on Silver Ball Heroes, which is
right.
pretty fantastic.
Right.
This is a short film that creates many questions. At the time of this recording, it can only be found on YouTube, which is absurd. I think there's three versions you can find, one where it's split in half, and it's only 24 minutes, so it seems unnecessary. So definitely, if you find it, watch the full one. It's a 24 minutes, 41 second short film that you should really see before listening to the rest of this conversation. So stop doing squat thrusts or whatever it is you do during podcast. I know I shouldn't project what I do. and go watch the film while we wait here. So we'll just maintain silence for 24 minutes and 41 seconds. And
perfect.
Then,
Commence thumb twiddling.
Yes. Or I could just I'll just edit it.
Oh, okay.
So I chose this for a specific reason. When I researched pinball films, because I wanted to have you on, I could find a couple, and they were all pretty well known. I figured most people interested in pinball will have seen those films. And then deep in the pinball internet world, a fascinating place that I did not know existed until your passion of pinball brought it to my life. And one of the things I really loved about this world was something called Pin Geek.
Yes.
That I came across, and it had a page that mentions where pinball machines are in films, and it's very, very specific. So I have one here to share. It reads like this. Modesty Blaze, 1966. So that's the film. Spaceship, that's the game. Williams, 1961. Coral, Gottlieb, 1961. Shrieks Hotel Suite, Spaceship. Scene at 11 minutes, 50 seconds, featuring alternate cabinet art. Coral, seen in 13 minutes, 25 seconds into the movie. Screenshot here, thanks to Franz and Klaus Schneider. And I just love just the specificity and the fact that when someone's passionate about something, you have to include all the information. So mm-hmm. you have to say alternate art. You
yes.
have to let people know that you know that's not the normal cabinet art for the game.
Because you know that people are going to look for it. And if you had cited it without
yeah.
mentioning that it was alternate
yep.
art, someone was going to have to mention that it was alternate art.
Yes.
Yes.
They'll one-up you with your passion.
I do. I love that site. I also love there's a group on Facebook called Pin Spotting.
Oh, okay.
Which is if you happen to be watching television mm-hmm. or a movie or whatever the case may be, you can take a screenshot or send a photo up to the group, and it's not as specific. It
okay.
doesn't do timestamps for
sure.
the most part or anything, but it does say, for example, when the new Toy Story movie came out, Toy Story 4, the toys are inside of an old pinball machine in like an antique store.
Okay.
So a bunch of people were posting the clips of like, here are the toys inside this machine. And it's not a machine that exists, and it's just the inside of the machine, but it's still enough that it's going to make this
right.
the site. Yeah, so it's really interesting seeing people who are posting stuff there. My friend Dan from Pittsburgh, actually, he runs that little community online, and it's pretty cool just to see how people are so tuned into it. Like, before I started playing, I may not have noticed that there was
right.
a machine behind the booth where they happened to be sitting for dinner in this, because it has nothing to do
it.
With,
yeah.
yes. But immediately now, as soon as I see it, I'm like, oh, and I like have to stop what I'm doing and be like, oh my gosh, you guys, you can see the corner of a cabinet in this TV show for 3 seconds. Or you see a lot of like, within other video games, people will take screenshots and be like, oh, I was playing this game, and in this game there's like
oh,
an arcade
sure.
scene and somebody's also playing this.
Right.
So you get a lot of that stuff popping up.
People
now.
Must have really like lost their minds with Stranger Things. They're like, they're in an arcade.
Right.
like
right.
listing off like everything that yeah.
Yeah. Or like the Bob's Burgers episode where they were in the arcade
oh, yeah.
has some good like made up machines in there. So.
That are references to real ones or?
No, just
okay.
like new, just, yeah.
Like they do with the burgers. Or...
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
The synopsis of this short film is heroes of the pinball arcade race to stop the invasion of the video game terrors. There it is.
Much like real life.
Yes. Indeed. Now, before we get into specifics, let's discuss the players. And normally, this is where I would attempt to place the film in context. Sadly, there are just more mysteries than answers following this film. The director, Mike Wellington, only did 3 other shorts before switching into producing. He's still producing. He just did a documentary called Stooge, which is a feature documentary about Robert Pargeter. Probably saying that wrong. Iggy Pop's number one fan, and it covers 3 years leading up to the 50th birthday when he tries to track down his hero.
Oh.
Yeah. I have not seen it.
That's pretty interesting, though.
I didn't know it existed, but now I do.
Now you do.
The editor, Rob Wright, mostly did documentaries and shorts in the 90s. The animators, Phil Austin and Derek Hayes.
Yes, our favorites.
We didn't tell you, but there's animation. Hopefully you've seen the film by now. They did one short called Sky Whales, which you can find online, and it is so weird. as should be expected now that we have, you know, become aware of their work. Jeff Harvey is the pinball wizard in the film. He goes by Jeffrey Harvey online. I could not find anything about this man for a year because I was looking under the shortened version of his name.
Oh.
And I wanted him to be a pinball expert.
Yes.
Which he is not. He he has 1 acting credit, and this is it.
Oh.
Yeah. He is was a composer, mostly on British Australian television, highly respected. Sadly passed away March 30th of this year, and you can find an Australian 60 Minutes feature about him on YouTube. But the best thing you can find about Jeffrey on YouTube, other than Arcade Attacks, is on YouTube, and it's called Jeff Harvey versus Ben Folds 5. And this is a real thing. Ben okay. Folds 5 played an Australian TV show in the 90s, I'm guessing.
Okay.
And at one point, first of all, Jeffrey being a classical composer, he's not going to like the ivory ticklings of Ben Folds.
Fair.
I think his name's Ben. I never listened to them, but he throws his piano stool at the piano at the end, you know, like a real like rock and roll move. Does not sit well with Jeff Harvey.
Oh no.
And it is quite lovely. So I recommend everyone check that out.
See, I'm imagining like a brawl where one of them is smashing the others under the top of like the opening baby grand piano.
That would be that amazing. Kind of thing,
which is probably not what it is, but I'm just going to sit with that for a minute.
Yeah.
Don't tell me if that's what it is. I'm going to find out
okay,
later.
Okay, yeah. Everyone go watch. It's not violent, but it's very polite. Next, we have Tommy Hogan, Edwardian Dreams. Now, this man was a true mystery. I could find nothing online. We had previously talked about this man, and it was just head-scratching.
Yes.
And everything about him was a mystery. Last night, I found a 2016 Facebook post by a gentleman named Noel Razor Smith. Now, Razor, I found out, is his DJ name. Mm-hmm. He is a rockabilly DJ in South London. And, so here's what his post said. And it's been about a year that these people have been mysteries. So you would think I found the Holy Grail or something.
I got the best text message.
Yes, I screenshot it because I couldn't even type anything. And it said, the first DJ who made a big impression on me was Tommy Hogan, with his Edwardian Dreams, which we'll get to. The Edwardian Club in Brixton was South London's premier rock and roll club back in the 70s, and it was de rigueur for any drape-suited young Ted's night out. That's British talk, I think. The music that Tom played was a great mix of rock and roll, rhythm and blues, and a smattering of rockabilly. In the Edwardian Club, you could hear Louis Jordan's Big Bess alongside Johnny Kidd in the Pirates' Growl, or Dodie Stevens' Pink Shoelaces, followed by We Want a Boogie by Sony Burke. Guess. I don't know any of these words, but I think I'm going to do maybe a playlist in honor of Tommy Hogan and try to figure out how to get that up on the
website.
That would
be great.
So anyway, he just concluded that as teenagers just getting into the scene, this was all musical gold to us. So I hear Tommy Hogan's not doing well these days, unfortunately, but major shout out to his contribution to the South London music scene. And then lastly, the player in the film is Stephen Highfield. He plays Defender, and this man is still a ghost. I can find nothing about...
He's still playing Defender.
Oh, man. He's pretty intense. We'll definitely get into that. But before we do, there's some terms and things that come up regarding pinball, and so I was hoping you could break it down for us.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Back glass.
So backlass, when you're looking at a machine, is kind of the square art piece that's at the top.
Okay.
So it's where your score display is going to be. It's the primary art piece that kind of draws you in when you're looking at machines. It's the first thing that your eye is drawn to.
Okay. The back box.
The back box is the part that contains the backlass, so the top head of the machine. There's also some mechanics in there as well, boards and things. But the backlass is part of the back box.
Okay. The lower playing field.
Ah, yes. So the actual part of the game that you are playing on, that kind of large, long rectangle, the lower portion of that would be the lower play field. And the whole thing is just the play field. So you can do upper, mid, and lower. But that whole piece is just called the play field.
Okay. You just covered my upper play field question. the cabinet.
So the cabinet is the bottom part of the machine, like the wooden piece that actually holds the playfield and all of the wires and electronics and speaker and things like that underneath.
So that's not where like the side images would be or something? Or
so that's the side of the cabinet. So it's considered cabinet art.
Okay.
When it's on the side of the cabinet. Yep.
And lastly, my favorite term, the outhole.
So outhole would just be the drain. So when you drain the ball, you can drain out outlanes, or you can drain through a center drain. But when they say outhole, it's also, I think, that there's a lot of British vernacular that's involved in, you know, kind of the way that they are using pinball terminology is slightly different. But that's when you drain the ball, you lose the ball.
Okay. It's also how I'll refer to my enemies from now on. Yes. Just a bunch of outholes.
Bunch of outholes.
All right, so that brings us to the film at hand. Is there anywhere you'd want to start?
I mean, I think that we have to begin with the terrifying puppet.
Yes, we do. It starts off with something. I rewatched it, and it still sticks out to me that, like, this is a movie about an arcade, and we start off with this old, I'm guessing it's a coin-op situation, but it's a very evil looking laughing thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like Laughing Sal, like so it's interesting. So it's like an abandoned boardwalk situation.
Yes.
It sets a very grim tone because you have all of these abandoned old coin-op games. And coin-op amusements.
Right.
So, like, the history of coin-operated amusements is kind of, like, shoved in this little warehouse thing that we're seeing. And then you have this crazy evil puppet that's just cackling in this otherwise empty space. Yeah. You know, leading into a short film that's really talking about how video games are kind of attacking, taking over, you know, and pinball is being phased out. So you have this like doom and gloom start to it, which is really strange. But I think that they, you know, like obviously they shift gears quickly, but it's just like this very interesting stylistic choice to be able to like kick things off, because the person is like, what is happening right now? And you think it's going to be the weirdest thing you see in the film.
It's a very weird intro, but they leaps and bounds for the rest of the film.
Yes.
Are there any common misconceptions about pinball?
I think that one thing that newer players, when I talk to them, or people who have played it like a little bit and not really gotten into it, that they're most surprised by when we play more is that there's like an actual progression to games. So like you can get into a wizard mode. Like there's a way that you can like theoretically beat like parts of the game.
Yeah.
And some people are just like, I thought you just like keep the ball alive kind of thing. Like it's not like a video game. And I was like, no, you go through levels, you go through, you know, like there is a parallel, and video games certainly took a lot from some things that they were doing in pinball. And there's a little bit of play back and forth between the two, but there's definitely more of like a storyline and more of a progression, especially in modern games, that some people don't realize is there.
In the film, it begins with the creepy laughing machine dude, but then we get to see Edwardian Dreams, played by Tommy Hogan.
We do.
With his beautiful back tattoo of the game.
Now, okay. So when we talked last time, I was like, this is custom art. So, so Tommy has this very, very large back piece of Edwardian Dreams.
The tattoo's real.
The tattoo is real. I figured it had to be. So this very impressive tattoo. And I'm thinking that the tattoo had to have come first.
Yes, the tattoo is of Edwardian Dreams, the club night.
Okay.
So he had that done.
And also then had someone make a backglass using that art. And I was chatting with my friend Kurt, and he believes that the machine that the backglass was placed on was a Bally Knockout.
Whoa, that's a boxing one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I think I've seen that one.
Yeah. So basically he would have replaced the backglass. The playfield still looks the same.
Oh.
But you can still have custom backglasses made for games.
Sure.
So some people do alternate art for their machines. Some people are doing whole rethemes of games. So it seems as though he had someone produce this backglass for him that would have been in the same style as his tattoo and as the club.
Yes.
I wonder if he ever had the game in the club.
So, I know a little bit about that. And so, DJ Razor, or Noel Razor Smith, who at the time of this recording is DJing at a rockabilly festival in the UK called Rockabilly Shakedown, said that Tommy's tattoo is real and the pinball machine was made in honor of the tattoo and the club night. And that upon completion of the film, Tommy was given that machine.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, that's pretty great.
That is really great.
Yeah, I don't know if it went to his home or the club, but I just love that it was maintained. It still existed. It's probably there still.
Oh, it's fantastic.
So someone could find it. And since
I want to play
since
it.
Since Tommy's still alive, like, people should reach out. If you're in the UK, maybe you could have a chance to play the only Edwardian Dreams.
Tommy, if you are out there, I want to come play your Edwardian Dreams machine, please. It'll be so much fun.
That would be pretty amazing. I would want pictures, footage of that. But what would be your machine that you would get a complete back piece tattoo of? Even, I don't know if you'd have to remove tattoos to do that. But
one that exists right now? So I have a few pinball tattoos, pinball related tattoos. And Sea Witch is the game in my collection that I was most excited to get. That was a machine that I wasn't sure that I was ever going to get.
Yeah.
And I do have kind of a smaller Sea Witch tattoo, but because it's also ocean themed and powerful, like warrior goddess type woman, I think that that would probably be where I would go.
When was Sea Witch from?
Sea Witch is from 1980 or 81, right there. Yeah, so it's early Stern Electronics. The Stern that exists today is Stern Pinball, so relation, but not the same company.
Got it.
And early Stern machines, so like late 70s, early 80s machines are really my favorite pins.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely, you know, she's the crown jewel of my little collection at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an epic procession of pinball machines that
it's
happens.
It's so epic. It's like this sweeping curved wall. And the entire room is dark.
Totally.
You can't see any context whatsoever except for the glow of the machines. And I don't know how they did that, but it looks amazing.
Yeah, it's why I think this should exist not just on YouTube, because I want to see it in its pristine. I know it exists somewhere like this. It's a fantastic shot, and you know it's not a special effect like this. They were in the room with those machines.
Yep.
And that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it was. And you know, that it's all the era of games that I really am super into, so I was just like, yes, like, this is great. My friend Carl mentioned seeing this short on Showtime in the early 80s, so like, this is when those games were still very current.
Yeah.
So it's very like nostalgic and lovely, but also it's just like capturing a piece of time that I very much relate to and love. And then just to see them all there, and you know that they were all like in pristine condition. Like, they all looked beautiful. And I was just like, whose are they? Like, who has those? Where do they belong? Like, who had this collection and like was working with them to make this? But it was just really, really cool. And I loved kind of the intro piece when they said that the pins are the lords of the amusement machines.
Yeah.
And the way that they present them is almost like very regal. Like, it's something where you just like are standing kind of in awe of, like this is amazing. This is an amazing thing to see.
I also like that they refer to pinball machines as pin tables.
Yes, pin tables.
Interesting. Do they have different names in Australia for pinball machines?
Pennies, I hear
Ooh,
pennies.
pennies.
And I was watching a German documentary, and they just call them pinballs, which is confusing because the balls that go in the machine are
Right.
also pinballs. I'm just like, you put pinballs in your pinballs?
That is confusing.
Huh.
I only recognize two of the machines in this
Instead
procession.
of having a
I
normal
think
score
Space
list,
Invaders
you
and
have
Dark
normal
Knight.
courses, which have
Is Dark
normal
Knight in there?
scores. Dark Knight's not in
Dark
there.
Knight's not in
Because
there.
Dark Knight came out many years after
I
this was
just think
made.
about Dark Knight a lot. It's like the only game I know that's a pinball machine, so I just try to put it in
Just
anywhere. I'm like,
always
I know what I'm talking about.
reference
The Dark Knight. Not
Right.
Batman. It was an actual knight. Did you recognize all of the machines or
I did.
nice.
Yeah, so it was a lot of electromechanicals and early solid states as they had at the time. That was all they had at the time. But yeah, just a ton of amazing machines. And I love that as he was explaining some rules of some of the machines,
Yeah.
which means that this theoretically would have been much longer than 24 minutes and 41 seconds. Because when he's going through all of these rules, it's like, did you do this for every machine? Because if you did, like
Right.
this is gonna be long. And they started playing like some music over it, and also there were other machines like Gorgar, which was the first machine that actually had speech. In the machine, you could hear it because in attract mode, the games are programmed to like make sounds so that people hear them and then want to go play them.
Oh, attract mode.
Attract mode.
Okay.
Yeah. Attracting you to that game.
Right.
So as he was explaining the rules, the games were obviously in attract mode and we're all talking, and you see him like kind of look over and laugh and say that the other machines are getting jealous. But he was really like giving the machines this
Oh my gosh.
personality.
So it makes a joke about Gorgar, is that his name?
Yeah.
Being the first talking pinball machine. Wow.
Yeah. And then they start with actually animating the backglasses. So when he says that about Gorgar, you then see the Gorgar backglass and Gorgar starts moving,
Yeah.
which is real
Yes. Well,
trippy.
and the first time I said this before, I don't know what I was doing, but I didn't see that. And so later on, when things really get going, I was like, what is happening in this movie?
Okay, I was paying attention, and the first time I saw that happen, I was like, what is happening? Like, did I accidentally dose myself? I don't know what's going
It feels like it for sure. And then right after that, we get Stephen Highfield playing Defender. And he is all consumed by this video game. The craziest joystick maneuvers. Like,
Oh
it's
my
super
gosh, fastest
intense.
fingers in the West.
I've known mutants to be very stubborn.
Yeah, and he starts insanely ranting about snide mutants.
I really fear them. I don't mind any of the other pieces. I can get blown up by the swarmers and the betas and be annoyed. But it's those mutants. They are so snidey, they are so clever, and they are so full of themselves.
He's obsessed with the mutants in that
He
game. Like,
is.
he's fine with the fighters, he's fine with everybody else, but the
Oh, yeah.
mutants, do not get him started.
No, he. Wow. He even. Yeah, he just. He goes on and on about the mutants and that the game is alive and what's happening.
You've got one humanoid left, so you're going to defend that like hell. And those things which are going to try and destroy that humanoid are coming at you like hell and are coming at it like hell.
It's very disturbing, contrasted to the previous talk we were having calmly and information based about pinball machines. Then you have someone that's basically like a junkie, if you will. And then later on, somebody calls the Space Invader machines Nutter machines, which I think is pretty fun. It's like the first time I started to get the hint that like maybe this isn't gonna go the art, you know, the arcade game route.
Right.
We might be really watching these
We
silver
might
ball
be
heroes.
rooting for the
Yeah.
heroes. Who would think that we were rooting for the heroes and not the invaders?
Right.
Yeah, that was a real spin that we weren't expecting.
Right.
But also when he's playing, he does not ever look away from the like it's a
No.
very different interaction that we have with the two. So here we are explaining the pinball machines, like engaging
Right.
with the camera. We're laughing, we're smiling, we're having a nice time. Then we're going to play a little bit and show you what's happening. And then we go over to Defender, and it is not talking directly to camera, staring at the screen, never smiling, like, so intense.
Yeah.
And the contrast is very, very stark.
Yeah, for sure. And then things start to come alive.
I feel Joker.
And so, for me, having missed Gorgon, I was watching a documentary.
Yep.
And then suddenly things change in this movie, and there is animation happening, things coming alive, both from the arcade and, I mean, the video games and from the pinball machines.
Yeah, so on the pinball machines, you have Algar and Gorgar and Fireball and Xenon, and the actual backglass art begins to be animated.
Yes.
But then not only that, you have emerging from the actual machines themselves, from the cabinets, you have the characters from the games, like actual humans who are dressed in the style of the characters from these machines.
So crazy.
It's just... So they had to, like, okay, so technically to make that happen, right?
Yeah.
They need to pull the playfields out along with all of the electronics and all of the guts of everything that's inside of these machines. They have to pull it all out to put a human body in there and then have to put, like, a false top to make it look like they're actually coming out of the game. I was like, this is a lot of work for, like, a couple of scenes that make you just go, what the hell is going on?
I don't understand what I'm seeing.
But then there's, like, this really cool... So the woman who's supposed to be from Xenon, I think, there's, like, this crazy backlit moment of her where they obviously rearranged the machines into, like, a V-shape kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's, like, using her hands to, like, kind of do... You can't see what I'm doing because this is a podcast.
I can see it. It's
but,
great.
Like, use almost, like, magic hands, just, like, pow, like, with her hands. And, like, the machines all start to light up down this row. And it's, like, what am I watching right now? Like, what is happening?
That's not how you, like, guys start.
That should be... Oh, my God. If I could start a tournament like that. Mm-hmm. She's almost like the flag girl at the start of, like, a drag race.
Yeah, exactly.
Where all of a sudden, like, all eyes on her, and, like, there's smoke everywhere, and then the lights are just going, and you're revving, and then you plunge your ball.
Yes. That's true. It is really something to see.
Yeah, definitely. I know that you guys all took care of watching this during that pause.
Of course.
So you know what we're talking about.
And those characters that emerge from the machines, those are all real games.
The ones where they're actually coming up out of the games before we get to the crazy animated sequence. Yes, those are all actual games.
Okay. Yeah. So Gorgon and Algor, you said?
Gorgar, Algar.
Oh, Algar. That's
Fireball,
a different person.
Xenon.
Yes,
those are all real games.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. They're interesting choices, but they're good character choices.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This is probably what they were choosing from.
Well, that also had to be in this person's collection.
That's
because
true.
Who is this person and where are these games?
Yeah. So then the Space Invader leaves the machine, and Edwardian Dreams goes to his little patio, looks out, and sees the Space Invader, which zaps him.
Leaving only his blue suede shoes.
Oh, just... What a rockabilly way to go.
Right? But I do... Something that I picked up on watching it the second time since we last spoke was the... you know, when he's talking about kind of, like, turning off this game and sending them back to where they belong kind of thing, these Space Invaders, because it drives him crazy. So this is a personal vendetta that the Space Invaders did not like being turned off by Edwardian Dreams. And now the battle is on.
Yes.
So this is what sparks Attack Wave 1,
mm-hmm.
which is a cool video game, like, pull that they used for this, like, battle that we're going into. But you can actually see the Space Invaders come out of the console and start to, like, march across the carpet of his apartment. And then when he goes up out on the roof, like, something's not quite right. And then zap.
Yep.
So don't insult your video games to their faces.
Yes.
Is the moral of the story.
Half the time with the Space Invader and that stupid noise it makes, not only turn it off, I'd rather smash it to pieces. It's an idiot box.
We covered that Xenon is a real game.
Yes.
Is the Tilt guy real?
The Tilt guy.
I don't know. I wrote the Tilt guy. I was really hoping you would know what I meant.
Darn it. So there's a whole... I know there's a whole game that they created in the animated sense called Heroes or something. Heroes.
Yeah.
That is not a real game.
Okay.
So if Tilt guy is one of the guys from there...
I think that's what it was.
Yep. Then no. So I was going crazy trying to figure out what the heck game this is that all of these animated characters that come into the big animated battle sequence are from. And I think the consensus, I was talking to my friend Bowen, and is that it's based off of characters from other games, kind of loosely, but not exactly. So one of them could kind of be from Xenon.
Sure.
One of them could kind of be from Pharaoh or whatever. You know, like, you have games that probably influenced, like, the pinball art probably influenced the art of this made-up machine that they did, the Heroes machine.
Got it.
But they are the ones that do battle.
Okay. That makes sense. Is there a war between pinball people and arcade people?
I don't necessarily think that there's a war. Mm-hmm. I do sometimes hear people be like, oh, well, I just play video games. Or, you know, like, okay. And that's fine. And everyone has their own preference, right?
Yeah.
So I grew up playing pinball and video games.
Yeah.
But then kind of just... the pinball kind of fell off because it wasn't in as many places, right? And I still played console games and stuff, but I wasn't going to an arcade kind of thing. So I definitely feel like there was an accessibility thing for some people where they just know video games and that's something that's comfortable for them. If I'm out in an arcade, like I was just out at Next Level and in Hillsboro where it's over 120 pins, over 100 arcades.
Whoa.
And it's... everything's on free play, which is crazy. It's like $15 to go in, and then everything's on free play.
What?
You should come out sometime. It's really fun. I run tournaments there, too, just like for fun tournaments.
Yeah.
But it's like, I played one game of Tapper, and I played 40 games of pinball, you know? So I have a very skewed balance of things when I'm playing. I am definitely a pinball above anything person when I'm going out to play games. I don't know. I feel like you could play video games at home if you want to. But now that I have pinball at home, I don't do that. Even, you know, like,
right.
I like the physicality of pinball. I like the physics that are involved. I like the unpredictability.
Yeah.
It's interesting hearing Steven talk about, like, when he's insulting pinball machines. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're not playing against, like, a brain of anything.
Right.
And he kind of is inferring that there's, like, a braininess to video games that does not exist in pinball.
Well, he also thinks that the... characters are alive.
That's true, and they're trying to get him. So he could be wearing a tinfoil hat, still playing that same game of Defender.
It does feel like he probably is. there's an athleticism almost to pinball that's not in video games. I don't know if it's because you're physically doing the tapping of the... is there a word for the buttons on the side?
Flipper buttons.
Yep,
to activate the flippers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's also, like, you can nudge machines. You can physically move the machine that you're playing with. And every machine is going to be different. They're like snowflakes. Like, so they're all going to have, like, oh, this bit may be, like, a little bit raised on this one because it inserts up or something. And it's unpredictable. Like, video games, for the most part, you know, like, okay, this is happening, and then this wave comes, and then these guys come. Or, you know, like, Super Mario, like, you can do speed runs because you know exactly where everything is every single time you do it.
Right.
In pinball, there's a theoretical, like, if I hit the shot, then this happens. But it's because it's a physical thing that is constantly being subject to human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
You have so much more influence on what's happening on that game, and also that game becomes unpredictable most of the time. So it's like, sure, 9 times out of 10, this will happen, but then this one time, you're going to be like, what the heck is going on over here?
Yeah.
So there's something where it just, like, it keeps you on your toes, and you can really, like, throw some hip action into it and, like, really get into the game and have an effect on the physical game itself,
mm-hmm.
which... for me, is really cool and makes things super interesting. Not that I'm saying that video games aren't interesting. I don't think that it's quite as black and white as the documentary is. Like, nope, we are battling this out right now. Though the documentary is very clearly in favor of pinball being superior.
Yes.
So
there's also, like you said, like sort of games that are hybrids.
Mm-hmm. Like, there are.
What's the There was one I really liked.
Yeah.
Was it Miss Pac-Man? Or
there's Baby Pac-Man.
Baby Pac-Man.
Where you play Pac-Man up top and then can kind of escape down to the pinball at the bottom.
Yeah.
And then you go back into the game, back and forth. There's one called Caveman. Which is pinball at the bottom, and then kind of a reflection screen kind of up at the top that has Caveman. And then Granny and the Gators is another hybrid machine.
Is that Baby Pac-Man anywhere in Oregon?
Quarter World, I think, has Baby Pac.
Cool.
Yeah. Yep. And then, and you can find every pinball machine that is in your area on Pinball Map, pinballmap.com. There's also an app for Pinball Map, and they just updated it, so you can see how very spoiled we are in Portland and the Northwest. Yeah. We have over 1,000 machines out on location in the Portland metro area.
That's intense.
Over 330 different places that you can go play.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking of just the arcades you've listed, because we have Ground Control, Quarter World, Next Level.
Yep.
But they're also at bars. I mean, they're kind of all over.
Yeah, they are everywhere. Wedgehead is a really great one in Portland that has a good mix of like from EMs up to super modern games. So
that's an arcade?
It's like a bar. I would say barcade.
Oh, I always thought it was just like a salad place for some reason called Wedgehead.
Oh my gosh, they should clearly just have a whole range of wedge salads.
Yes, that's all they do. Just one person quartering heads of lettuce back there, just putting dressing on it. That'll be $16,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, no. Yeah, Wedgehead is all pinball, so no arcade machines. Literally all pinball, and it's all ages up until a certain time of the day, so and then it turns to just bar.
Sure.
But that's one of the newer spots. So Chris Rhodes has been operating games in town for a long time, and then he opened the spot, and it's one of those like shining examples of like really well maintained pinball and a great variety of pinball that we have. But like I said, we are very spoiled here. There are places where you're lucky to find just like a few games in a bar somewhere, or like, yeah, we've got one in the corner of this like kids arcade kind of thing, which is surrounded by Redemption Games, and we're very, very lucky.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So ultimately, oh wait, before we move on, I gotta ask.
Okay.
How did you start with pinball to begin with? Did somebody introduce you to the pinball machine?
So when I was growing up, my uncle had an Evel Knievel pinball machine in his basement, which is now in my garage.
Woo!
His machine. It finally made it here. It took 2 years to get here from New York, but my friends helped me move it cross country slowly.
And it's the actual machine.
The actual machine from my uncle's basement, which is so cool. And I love that it still exists and is still functioning, and that I I'm keeping it in the family, so to speak. So so I played that when I was little. My mom likes to talk about how we would be at Coney Island and I would be standing on a milk crate playing pinball at Nathan's. And she always has those memories of that, you know, I was always playing when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, it kind of fell off. Like I had played it in bowling alleys a little bit when I was a teenager, but we didn't have a lot of it around. And then I got super heavily involved in the music scene, so I was always out at concerts and stuff. So I was never going to bars. Like, I didn't drink. So I was never just, like, gonna go hang out, and there weren't a lot of arcades around. And then when I got involved in music, it was like I was going to school and working both full-time, and that was crazy. And then I'd be at concerts until whatever time in the morning, and then do it all over again. So I didn't have a lot of that time and wasn't really thinking about it. It wasn't in my like collective consciousness that point in time. But then when I was working PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo up in Seattle, about 5 years ago, so I helped run the Double Fine booth at all, like when they do those events. So I helped put that stuff together for them. And one of my friends who used to work there was like, well, we're both not working right now. Let's go down to the classic arcade section of PAX. So we head down there, and there were pinball machines. And he is a huge pinball person, so he immediately beelined towards them. And I was like, oh, that's right. I used to love this. And just playing again, I was like, this is so great. And then I was back down. So he lives in the Bay Area, and I was back down there for work and took a couple extra days and went to stay with him, and he had like 6 or 7 pinball machines in his apartment. And I was like, oh, that's right. You can have this at your house. Like, and I was just like, oh, I want this in my house. So like just waking up and being in pajamas and being able to like play pinball without having to like put on pants.
Right.
That's great. Like I love that. I was like, I want this. Like this is what pantsless I need more pinball of in my life. Pantsless pinball. And so I worked on like getting my first machine.
What was the first one?
First one I got was Theater of Magic. So I still have that.
That makes sense.
Yep. A magician to have. Yep. Theater of Magic. It's a mid-90s title, like super popular by John Papaduke. And it's a fun game, but it's also a game that's a really good intro into like understanding playing pinball because the game tells you everything you're supposed to do.
Oh, great.
Both with audio cues and visual cues. So I'm not great at looking up at the display to see what it's telling me, like written out. So if I can look at the playfield and know, and if the game is actually saying to me, do this, I'm like, right. Oh, yeah, I can do that. No problem. So that was like it was a good way for me to get back into it and to get a better understanding of it. Since then, all of the machines that I've purchased have been from that like late 70s early 80s period, so that's really my sweet spot. But theater will always have a place in my heart as the one that kind of like drew me back in. And Matt's also the one who got me to play in my very first tournament, so that was 5 years ago, I think, ish, almost 5 years ago. And that was just like a novice tournament run by Eka, who started Bells in Oakland.
Okay.
At Scarlet City Coffee, which is sadly no longer there, but run by another rad woman who played pinball down in the area. So it was a crazy thing where I didn't necessarily want to compete because I'm not super competitive, so this is strange for me to do.
Yeah.
And I ended up sweeping the awards. So I got the novice award, the women's award, and I won the whole darn thing. Whoa. So I ended up being very confused and very happy. And then I came to Portland and played in my first tournament here, and I hated it because everyone was so serious.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I just want to do the fun version again. So that's how I got into it, and the fun part of things is what I try to perpetuate now by running casual tournaments that are just for fun, and you can get a trophy or some money, but like it's not points, it's not this crazy like, oh my gosh, I need to be the best in the state or the best in the... And there are people who love that and who are super into it, and that's great because that's, you know, in a hobby as diverse as ours, there are so many different reasons that people are playing. I like to play to have a good time.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And then how many machines do you have now?
So I have 6 machines now.
In your home?
In my home. In my living room.
Wow.
/ garage.
And do you have Sea Witch?
I do have Sea Witch.
Awesome.
Yes. That is my baby. She is not going anywhere.
Ultimately, I feel like this film is a love letter to pinball games.
It is.
The artwork and the craftsmanship, not so much to Defender.
it definitely, they chose a specific type of personality, obsessive Defender personality.
Yes.
They built this for the pinball to be the star of the show and to be the heroes, literally, in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So as someone who loves pinball, I appreciate the reverence that they show for the game and the machines. Like, pinball is kinetic art, and I think that they really took that concept and ran with it and represented it really beautifully, so...
Yeah, I just got excited before it was all super weird, just with that procession that we saw in the beginning, because I was like, oh, this is great, because you want to find a film that's either super ridiculous so that you can focus on the seriousness of someone's passion, or you want something that's paying loving tribute to, you know, pinball machines and the people that play them. And this had both, and it's so weird.
It's so weird. But charming. It's weird and charming.
Yes.
And real trippy.
Have you introduced any other pinball aficionados to the world of Arcade Attack?
Just recently.
Nice.
In trying to discover some things about, you know, what game was this actually.
Yes.
I was kind of waiting until, like, the show came out and be like, okay, everybody watch this and listen to this. And I finally caved in and was like, I need help figuring out what machine this is. but there are some people who are like, oh my gosh, I've only ever seen, like, little clips of this.
Oh,
and I haven't ever seen the whole thing. This is so cool. So hopefully we'll be able to get it back out in the public consciousness. And Tommy, if you are out there, let's talk.
Yeah. It'd also be a dream for like a pin geek or whatever the persons or people are called that type in like, oh, this game shows up at this point. Like right. The whole time.
All of these games show God. Up at this point.
And 11 minutes, 12 seconds. Like, it's just intense.
12:01 seconds. 12:06 seconds. Yes.
And now I'd like to play a game. And in it, I will test your knowledge of pin tables.
Oh, no.
In a game that I cleverly like to call Real Pinball Machine or Pinball Machine that Dirk Made Up. It's a good title.
It's a very descriptive title.
Okay, there's five.
Okay.
Let's see. Number one. Dr. Dude, Bally, 1990.
That is a real pin table.
You're correct. Number two, Dude Looks Like a Lady, Aerosmith, 1987.
That is one that Dirk just made
okay,
up.
Okay, that is true.
Though there is an Aerosmith table now.
I knew you'd know that.
Yeah.
Have you played it?
I have.
Okay. Is it terribly annoying because it plays Aerosmith
it's
songs
all the time? It's terribly annoying because it plays Aerosmith songs all the time.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I can play Walk This Way only so many times. Yeah. And then I have to choose another song.
Yes, exactly. Number three. Surf N Safari Gottlieb 1990.
That is a real weird game.
Oh, cool.
That actually exists.
Okay. I just love that they went with the N in the
yes,
middle.
Surf, the art's cool, too.
I'll look that one up. DJ Fatball's Pocket Palace by Cork Trucker 1942.
Oh, I would love for that to be a real thing, but that is a game that Dirk made up, and I want him to draw it for me.
That is true. Yeah. I even spelled it with a PH. DJ Fatball's. Because in 1942, that's got to be what the kids were doing.
Yes.
And then lastly, Turf Club, Chicago Coin, 1974.
Turf Club. Chicago Coin's a real thing, but I've never seen that game.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing is real.
You're right. Yeah. That's a real one.
Hmm. Okay.
I tried to find something that I hadn't heard you mention before.
Yeah.
So I just found a list online that was alphabetized. So I just was going through, just trying to mix it up. And this one didn't have a photo. So I was like, or maybe I can't remember. I looked at so many, but Turf Club is real.
All right. Just know I'm going to look that up on the Internet Pinball Database, which is like the Internet Movie Database, but for pinball and actually exists.
Wait, the Internet Pinball.
IPDB.org.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love this. Tilt. Hello, and I'm sorry to interrupt the interview, but a correction must be made. It appears when I did my research, the website that I went to that had listed alphabetically all of these pinball machines had also some coin-op games. So Turf Club is in fact a coin-op game. It is not specifically a pinball machine. It is in no way actually pinball related. So I apologize for providing misinformation. It wasn't my attempt to stump Jessica in any way. And I also wanted to note that she was so professional that she waited until the end of the interview to look up the game, which, knowing her passion for pinball, was very impressive to me. So I want to thank her for providing me that professionalism and also apologize for misinformation. So now, back to the show. Any final thoughts on Arcade Attack?
I have to thank you for introducing me to the fact that this existed, because I had no idea. There are a lot of people who like throw up videos online of like, you know, this is my pinball documentary or whatever. And it's like, and I don't get through a lot of things like that. But the art in this was so crazy and interesting. And like I said, just the reverence and the love of the games that they showed was really very sweet, even with the like weirdness of the Defender stuff mixing, you know, like with that kind of like rivalry that existed. But to be able to see that crazy collection, to be able to find out about Tommy, like all of these things are so, so fascinating. And it's like we are scratching the surface. Like, I'm sure there are a bunch of other stories.
Oh, yeah.
Like Tommy's, you know, like where you find these people who have these passions that mix together, like this, you know, like his rockabilly DJ club, like all the things that he was doing there, and this love of pinball, and the fact that like other people were so into it that they like super embraced it. And they're like, we made this machine and you can have it. Like, that's the part of the pinball community that I love, where it's like everyone is very supportive of each other in our weird little hobbies. Yeah. So it's like, I know that you like the strange thing, but I like it too. And just what they did with the artwork was just Like seeing those machines come alive is one of the coolest things. So if you guys haven't actually checked it out yet, we forgive you. Just go watch it now.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. What is a good day like for you?
A good day is a day that I get to play some pinball with some friends, maybe. Or maybe alone.
Yeah.
Depends on my mood. Pantsless alone. Right? Pantsless alone. Or pantsless with friends. Who cares?
Sure.
Like, get to play some pinball. I get to pet my cat. I get to go outside.
Your cat's fine with the pinball machines?
Tesla is fine with the pinball machines. He sometimes sits on them. Usually not when I'm playing them. He is not the type of cat that's going to see the ball and chase it around. That would be a good day.
Yeah.
Okay, this would be a good day. Playing pinball pantsless, Tesla is trying to chase the ball over the glass.
There you go.
And then looks up at me and says meow. And that's, yes, that's the day.
Is there a cat-themed or mouse-themed pinball machine?
Okay, so there is a game called Bad Cats.
Oh.
Yes. And when you hit the center ramp, it goes meow, 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 meow.
Wait, why don't I have this game?
Right, why don't you have this game? There's not one in the Portland area right now, and it makes me real sad, but they have one up in Seattle that I will drive to go play. And
where's it at?
They have it at a place called Attaball in Seattle. And there is another game called Mousin' Around, where a real gruff, like, greasy, like, you know, wife beater, kind of like gold chains guy with a cigar says, so you want to mouse around? He's like, yes, I do. Thank you.
Is he? He's not a mouse.
He is not a mouse.
Wait, what?
No. And then there's like a sexy mouse.
Oh.
Yeah. So she what? Like.
That goes without
like,
saying.
She's got like blonde hair and like large breasts and it's weird.
Oh God.
Yeah. They're like, it's like normal cartoon mice and then her.
Wow.
She's like the Jessica Rabbit of Mousin' Around. It's very odd.
Mm.
They did that with a lot of games.
Yeah.
So I was just like, that's not necessary.
Was this the '80s?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big thing, a move in the '80s to just put large breasts on anything.
Yeah.
There's, you know, including VHS covers would have like rafts and they're just like, I put breasts on it. And you're just like, that's not in the movie though. That's just regular rafts in this movie. That's up the creek if you want to see it.
Oh my gosh.
I don't recommend it. But, and what is a bad day like?
Oh, I'm having less of those.
That's great.
These days.
That's
which
the
is,
goal.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happens if one of the machines stops working?
Then you fix it.
So do you fix your own machine?
I'm learning to. So I can do some basic stuff. And my friend Jake, who does Rose City Pinball, so he does the games that over at Seabar and Ship Ahoy and Goodfoot. So he actually got a Meteor, which is one of the games that I have. So now my Meteor is set up next to his Meteor in the shop. So he's teaching me how to like go through and fix things, which is really amazing.
What a great way to learn.
Yeah, it's very cool. And then I've done some very basic repair things on my own. I put a color DMD into my Theater of Magic, so that was just like a,
What are the words you're saying?
Oh, okay. So like the DMD dot matrix display for the Theater of Magic, that you know, they come in like that amber color normally.
Yes.
The dots. And this is a company called Color DMD that made a completely colorized version of those older game displays. So you swap it in, so you pull the old display out, and you have to like reconnect and put the new one in.
Is this frowned upon in pinball world that you're updating things or
It's not affecting the gameplay at
Got
all
it.
So that's fine. It's and most of the color DMDs I actually think are really cool looking. There are some that they just did an amazing job on, and there are some that aren't as great. The Baywatch one is real good. Speaking of large breasts on things,
but those are real people, I think, in the Baywatch one, maybe.
Yeah, except for they did replace one woman when you go through the match sequence. It's like a row of ladies holding numbers, and if you match the last two in your game, you get a free game.
I love that.
So they actually put two Easter eggs into that. My friend Oren actually did the programming on that game. So they'll go down the line of girls, and then the last one who's holding the match number, she'll kind of like go up and down a little bit. So in one of them, her breasts bounce sometimes. And another one, instead of it being like a humanoid woman, it's a squid in a bathing suit holding the sign. So squid girl.
Does the squid have breasts?
Squid has breasts.
Wow. That's a sentence I've never heard had said to me before.
Squid girl's kind of my favorite.
Squid has breasts. Okay. Wow.
Right? Yeah. So, pinball's weird, and I love
it. Yeah, that's fantastic. Any advice for someone who's interested in getting involved in pinball? How about two versions? One, someone in Portland, and one, someone maybe in a small town that doesn't have access like we have.
Yeah. So if you are in Portland, if you are of the female persuasion and would like to come play, come join us at Bells and Chimes. Mm-hmm. We're a very friendly, welcoming group. And if you are looking to play casually, when you are out at any of the pinball spots playing games, don't be afraid to ask people if you can join games with them. Just don't talk to them while they're actually playing.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
No sneaking up on people. That's generally frowned upon. But if you happen to be around and other people are playing, ask if you could join in on a game.
And that's where you take turns back and forth.
Yes, you take turns back and forth. We're a nice social group for the most part. And you can meet a bunch of people that way. They also do team league stuff on Sundays. So Portland Pinball on Facebook, I believe it is. Derek runs the Portland Pinball League. So it's like you get on a team of 10 players that are at a home base bar and then you play other teams. Tuesday nights, rotating locations is Flip City tournaments.
Okay.
So if you wanted to do something competitive, you could do that. Once a month out at Next Level in Hillsboro, I run casual tournaments. So right. Excellent for beginner players or new players, or people who just don't want points and just want to have a nice time
and play a bunch of games. Tournaments are all any gender,
yes,
identity.
Yep. Totally open. Yep. Totally open. And if you are somewhere that is not Portland and wants to play pinball, check out Pinball Map. That will tell you what is around you. If you find a pinball machine that's not listed there, you can add it yourself. So you can update all of the listings there. It's all active in real time. So if you show up somewhere and they don't have the machine, then you can make a note or take it off of the site. But also reach out on Facebook is a really good community. There's just ways that you can find groups locally of people who are playing. If you don't have location pinball, sometimes there are other owners in the area. And if you really can't find anyone, totally send me a message and I will help find a human who's near you and point you to pinball. Because I feel like we have a good community going. So, there are digitized versions of pinball machines like you can get like on your console your phone. You can play Pinball Arcade or things like that if you definitely don't have access or for some reason can't go out to play, whatever the reason may be. They do have apps and games like Pinball Arcade that have actual pinball machines that you can play in an electronic form. I think the physics are weird and different and I don't care for it as much, but there are some people who really like it and there are some people where that's all they have access to. So I'm not going to rain on anyone's
they also digital parade. Seem to like change point of view. Like you wouldn't hit the ball with a flipper and then slam your face to the top to get a good look at it and scoot your face on right behind the ball as you play.
That's true.
But in the game, the video games, they tend to be like, here's a perspective right behind the ball or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not really what it's about. But well, we now have reached my final and favorite question.
Okay.
Jessica.
Dirk.
What are your dreams like?
I mean, they're Edwardian dreams.
Oh, perfect. There it is. They should be for everyone. I don't even know what that means, and I'm the biggest fan of it.
Right? I know. I also don't know what...
Like, if I could get a still of his back playing that game, I would put that poster up.
So would I.
100%.
Let's make those posters. Yeah. Tommy, let's talk.
Let's talk. We have a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah. My dreams are pinball and cats and probably a hammock and a beach and a rocket launch. I don't know.
Oh.
Yeah, all those.
Well, that sounds great.
Right? Doesn't it?
Yeah. I'd also like to see that as a pinball cabinet.
So would I.
Like we with can... the bonus game where the ball goes up a ramp and into like a beach, maybe the sand would be troublesome, but.
This is kind of like mini golf now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Is there a mini golf pinball machine?
There are golf themes. Yes. Yep. There's No Good Gophers, which is a Caddyshack ripoff kind of thing.
They all sound like bad 80s TNA movies. Mousing around.
Have you seen Pinball Summer?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just checking. I just made Pinball Summer tank tops
Soft
Plunge. So, yeah.
That's
speaking of awesomely bad pinball movies.
It's Maybe one of the lesser quality ones. There's a couple that are really well known, and I can't think of the names right now.
Tilts, but the Brookshield. Yep. And then there are other documentaries that are also more famous. So like Wizard Mode about Robert Gagnon.
Yeah.
Kind of his story with being autistic and playing pinball competitively.
Oh, that's the Wizard one, right?
Wizard Mode, yep.
Wizard Mode, yes. You brought that to my attention, and I'm glad you mentioned it now because I wanted to thank you because I did watch it.
Oh, good.
After we talked, and it's really well done.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of good ones out there, so.
Yeah, I was, when Arcade Attack first came to my attention and it started and I was sure it was a documentary, I was so bummed because I have a no documentary rule. That isn't my point. This isn't about, like, it's not about movies being good or bad, and it's not about things being accurate. That's not what a conversation I wanted to have. It's not interesting to me with movies. And so I was like, oh, it's a documentary. And then when things went another way, I was like, yes, this is not a documentary.
If it is, I'm very confused.
Oh, yeah. Well, you would have seen a move by now. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have.
For sure.
I definitely would have.
And I have one last question that just popped into my head. If you could own any of the games in Arcade Attack that you don't own, off the top of your head, what do you think you would get? Would you get the Xenon one, or?
No, I like Xenon. I played Xenon. It's probably not the one that I would have, you know, that I would pick out of the bunch.
Yeah.
I mean, Edwardian Dreams is one of a kind.
Yes.
So I kind of feel like that's where I'm going to have to go with this.
Yeah.
There are some cool games in there for sure. Algar, you don't really see a lot of places. They showed Rogo in there, and I know that a lot of people hate Rogo.
Why do people hate Rogo?
It's kind of a simple game, and like there's not a lot. Like, it's spread out in a weird way, and it's got this weird little, like, horseshoe thing in the middle that is just, like, it's kind of, if you don't do it well, it's very dangerous, and the art is weird, but I love it. Mm. So, I understand that Tommy owns Edwardian Dreams, so if I can't get the Edwardian Dreams, then I'll take a Rogo.
Rogo. Okay.
I will very unpopularly take the Rogo.
There it is. Are they rare?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only ever actually seen one in person at Pinburg in Pittsburgh, so I'm really excited to
and
play
it's
again.
It's Western themed.
It's
or does it just have a horseshoe in the middle?
No, it's not an actual. It's not like a photo of a horseshoe. It's like a horseshoe pinball, so it's like a horseshoe shaped thing that your pinball would go through.
Goes
through one side and comes out the other side. Oh. So a horseshoe in that sense.
Got it.
Not in. Like a shoe that goes on a horse.
Okay, then is it a giant lizard like Godzilla?
No, it's like it's not quite like Viking themed. I'll have to find a photo and show you because it's
cool.
Yeah, it's weird, but I like it.
Okay.
For some reason.
That's great. That's most things I like. Because I'm like, I know it's weird, but I like
it. But yes.
I can't help myself.
I feel that way with people too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I try not to figure out why. I'm like, let's just live in the mystery of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like Arcade Attack.
Yes.
We'll just be silver ball heroes forever.
Join us in this mystery that is.
Well, Jessica, thank you for coming. Thank you for being
thanks
here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your passion about pinball and vast knowledge about the field. I'm very excited for your upcoming trip. And
thanks,
me too.
And
I look forward to... you know, being invited over sometime to play pinball.
Definitely.
Let's
do it.
Great.
Okay, cool.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.